In the first half of the morning, we did some Tonglen practice with Tara. And I was talking, answering one or two questions. You remember one about the effort to be mindful, to keep that continuous mindfulness going. And in response to that, I was partly talking about becoming more interested in and curious about our experience, so that our effort is really a skillful one, it's a wise effort. I think sometimes people, well, we need to do things with self-discipline at the earlier stages of practice, because you know, here we are, the 10 of us who are committed to the Dharma, and there's all those other ones out there. So in that situation, yeah, if there are one or two who are really going to wreck things, well, we have to sort them out. We have to not let them do that. So self-discipline is a useful quality to have, but it only goes so far and so deep. And in a way, it's a kind of first line of defense, or first way to practice, while we're building up our motivation and our inspiration and our understanding and our insight. Because the more of those things we have, the less sense of having to discipline ourselves there will be. So, yes, if we arrive at the point where losing awareness really feels unpleasant, it won't take much to bring us back to awareness and for us to sustain that. And I think sometimes if we look at how we're working with ourselves, some of us, again, don't want to generalize, but often there's a, rather than that kind of wise, incurious, engaging with experience, we're trying to do the path with too much simply relying on a sort of self-discipline, which springs from some idealism, but along with it a sort of near enemy, which is a kind of nagging ourselves to do things which uphold our self-view, our sort of positive view of ourselves. So yes, sure, we need self-discipline, but what we really need is to be increasing that sense of motivation, that sense of wanting to practice and seeing the importance of it and the beauty of it and so on. So then, when that's there, there's much less need for discipline, because things come much more naturally. And deepening our whole understanding of what's going on, looking into things. Let's look at this question. You were talking about those parts of us which are not participating. Can you say something about dealing with a cynical voice inside? Can it be integrated? It tells me that the spiritual life is just a pretty fairy tale to make human life seem meaningful and more bearable. Probably a few of us have got our own versions of that somewhere. And again, the tendency could be just to keep noticing that and, as it were, keep sort of just fighting it off. Just, oh, you know, sort of telling, on the days when you're not believing it, if you see what I mean, when you're aware that it's there and just feeling it sort of undermining kind of quality, you may just, as it were, sort of be trying to push it away. But if things keep coming back and keep coming back, then you need to really explore them again. You need to get kind of engaged with them. You need to really go into them. Because you know, some of us have things which we sort of take for granted. You know, tendencies and those voices saying whatever our version of the voice says, which keep on being there, you know, day after day, week after week, year after year. And we're sort of used to them, and we're used to sort of trying to push them away and push them off and, you know, sort of find something, you know, a better place in ourselves. But what we don't somehow do is ever quite really meet them, really confront them, really go into things and resolve them. And that's what they need. Something which keeps coming back like that needs to be addressed. Yeah. Because again, it's another sort of pull, it's another drag on your spiritual life. You know, we're so easy to kind of be trying to walk down the spiritual life, but sort of dragging all these, you know, chains and, you know, bits of, you know, old computer and all sorts of things along with us. And it's just makes it so difficult. Yeah. So, yeah, if we find there's a cynical voice that keeps coming back, then let's really go into it. Yeah. First off, let's really make it conscious. Yeah. So, sort of like, however you do that, you know, you can really put yourself into being that cynical voice. Okay, you know, what's really kind of become it? You know, what does it say? You know, what is its arguments? You know, okay, so, you know, spiritual life, yes, you know, it's, you know, life actually, well, you know, life is nasty, brutish, and short. That's one quote, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, and then you die, and then there's nothing, and so, you know, so we just have to make the best of it somehow, and yeah, because it's pretty horrible. But one way to make the best of it is to kind of imagine this lovely story about, you know, how we can all gain enlightenment, and yeah, so we go into it, we really sort of feel it out, and sometimes we realise it has the voice of somebody from our past, of course, you know, sort of somebody who told us all that, you know, several voices that told us that. So we realise, you know, it's part of our conditioning. And we want to bring that into communication with our going for refuge. I mean, we could, you know, tell it to, all right, talk to the Buddha. You know, that would be an interesting thing to do. You know, just have a dialogue. You could write it down. So cynical voice says, you know, there's all there is to life is just, you know, well, it's meaningless, and, you know, all you spent all those years of your life doing was, you know, just kind of purveying some kind of religion, which, as we know, is the opiate of the people, all that stuff. Yeah. And just see how the Buddha responds to that. Because I suspect the Buddha would have an answer. Yeah, out of all that exploration of life, all that exploration of human consciousness, all that, yes, yeah, I suspect he'd have an answer for it. So, yeah, you could do that. You know. You can talk to your spiritual friends about it, you know, really. And, you know, okay, you have to be open to the fact, is that true? Is it right? You know, you don't just work on the assumption that it must be wrong. You know, you bring all your faith in the Dharma, but, you know, your faith in the Dharma has to be based on reality. What's good about this voice? Well, if there's anything good about it, it's maybe that it wants what's real. Yeah? A lot of those voices, they are trying to uphold something. There's some value or other in there. So yeah, we find what's actually good and helpful in there, and sort of detach it from, you know, the way in which it's expressing itself. Yes, all right, there's an aspect of ourselves which upholds, let's not be fooled, let's not pull the wool over our eyes, let's not just engage in fantasy and fairy tales. Great. Now, that's really helpful. So now let's really look and see, you know, whether, you know, what it's saying is true, or whether it's just has a very limited view of how things are. And we could go, you know, we could go explore it in a whole Yogacara way. You know, is human life anything in particular? Anyway, I won't go into that, otherwise we'll never... Tempting as it might be. Yeah. So you really go into it and go into it. And then, you know, once you're really clear, okay. From then on, it may still pop up, but then from then on, you know, it's what the real situation is. From then on, you, if you like, you can just treat it like a Mara. Yeah. You just go, oh, hello, it's you again. You don't fight with it. No need to fight with it. Just be aware. Oh, okay. Hello, there's this sort of, you know, give it a name. Yeah. They used to call dismal Jimmyism. As Bhante sometimes talks about in those old lectures. Yeah. But before we can just kind of dismiss it, yeah, if it keeps coming back, we address it, we do something about it. And that frees energy. Yeah. We don't let these things just drag on and drag on and drag on. Okay, so let's do a bit more practice. So we're always keeping a sort of active edge in our practice. Yes, you know, we're looking to be as relaxed as possible, but we never go passive. If there are things we, you know, and we have to, we have to take ourselves seriously as Dharma practitioners, which means not accepting, you know, a sort of ho-hum practice which has got all these bits and pieces which sort of hold it back and slow it down. Yeah. We need to get in amongst all that. So just open space. Don't have to do anything. We don't have to be anyone. Let go of any kind of role. Don't have to be any particular age. and have to think in terms of gender. Just letting everything go. It's just what's here. Connecting with the earth, this meditation image of body like a mountain. So the body rises up, but it's as if it grows out of the earth. It's just the continuation of the earth. Body is a very alive mountain. So let's explore how it is to be embodied. What do we notice? the kindly awareness. Open, receptive to whatever we find. And if there's a sense that we're turning towards the feelings and the sensations, bringing awareness to them, let's see if we can soften that and widen it out. So rather than shining a lamp on them, see if we can have the sense of the whole body as a field of kindly awareness in which the feelings and sensations arise and pass away. And within that field of kindly awareness, noticing particularly the sensations, associated with the breathing. As the whole breathing body experienced within a field of kindly awareness. And also now noticing any thoughts, any thinking. Letting them just be known by this field of kindly awareness. Pretending to get lost in them, we could dissolve them into the breathing. Or imagine them just flying away on the out-breath, dissolving into space. But otherwise we let them just come and go. just like the breath and the sensations in the body. No holding on. Just allowing the flow of life. And if we're anything at all, it's just a field of kindly awareness. to bring the practice to a close. Nothing really has to change. That field of kindly awareness opens to include sights and sounds.